Steve. Steve Cochran Show here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, Dave Ennis, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vandevelt. Coming up, Steve Stone's going to join us, talk White Sox baseball. And at 9 o'clock, Ed McClellan's going to be here. Talk a little Chicago accent challenge, a bit we've been doing for a while where people call up, and if you got the best accent in Chicago, you can win a pizza. We ask you very specific questions about
it. If you have the best accent in Chicago, you probably already have a pizza.
Yeah. That's true. Well, this could be your second. This could be your backup pizza. We'll give you a backup pizza. The new movie, Sorry to Bother You, is out in select theaters in Chicago. The comedy, social satire, is getting rave reviews after being a hit at Sundance. The film stars Lakeith Stanfield as Cassius Green, a telemarketer who uses an overdubbed white voice played by David Cross, which results in better sales and a promotion to a power caller. But Sorry to Bother You is much more than code switching. This is great. This is a great film by first-time director Boots Riley. It's a dystopian satire that explores a not-too-far-off future of slave labor, corporate greed, marketing, branding, and organizing. Boots Riley is a famed musician from the Oakland-based rap collective The Coup, who arguably are the most politically charged group in rap history. And Riley himself has been a big part of the labor movement in California. And when watching this film, you would never know that this is the first foray for Riley. It's creative, fresh, surreal, authentic, and, well, hilarious. Boots Riley in studio on 720 WGN. Mr. Riley, great to meet you.
What's up? Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, you know, this movie has really grabbed everyone's attention, mainly the trailer, because it's so creative and so authentic in the way it's approached. But it's really about the telemarketing aspect of this. Before we get into the movie, you actually had a life of a background in telemarketing.
Yeah, it was, you know, using my creative energies for evil.
Right?
Yeah.
How was that experience, and how does that translate into what is in this film?
I mean, it's soul-crushing, and I spent my time in a cubicle plotting my revenge, which this is the final blow.
You are a longtime artist, musician, and you have, like I said, spent some time in the California labor movement. What moved you to write a screenplay? This is a debut. This is your film. You directed it. You put it together, but yeah, not something that you're necessarily known for.
Well, my grandmother ran Oakland Ensemble Theater. I wrote plays that were produced while I was in high school plays, and moved on, went to film school at San Francisco State. And actually, I was in film school when we got a record deal. So that was kind of the thing I was going to do first. And all these years I've been wanting to make a film. So
you with the
films,
the music, you're talking about record deal, The Coup, the group that you've been in, and a group that, like I said, was arguably one of the more, if not the most politically charged rap group in history. It's such great stuff. How does that inform your screenplay? The work that you did with The Coup, how does that translate into Sorry to Bother You?
Well, here's the thing. Rock and roll is supposed to be rebellious, right? Like it's supposed to have this thing like, oh, they're bad boys or whatever. But sometimes rock and roll is really just, they've got the jackets, but they're really just saying the same thing that a country singer is saying or whatever. They're not really bad boys because they've taken all their rebellion against the way things are out of it, and so my music is similar to that it is rebellious, and it talks about rebellion, and it has an edge to it because of that. And how that goes into the movie is that this is a movie that has that edge as well, the same edge that we're all thinking about. We don't know. I believe that nobody likes the way things are. There's not, you know, that. But most of us don't think there's a way to change it.
Right.
And this is a movie that has that in it as its backbone. And that's what has been in my music.
It is. It's at the core of everything that happens to the main character, Cassius Green, who is a telemarketer who discovers his overdubbed white voice, played by David Cross. And in that, he finds himself moving up the corporate ladder and getting an opportunity to make more money and to be more, to just be a power caller, as it is in the movie. But there's so much that plays out in there about whether or not he should be doing that for the system that's in place, whether or not he should be thinking about the workers that he came from, the people around him.
Yeah,
but that seems to be at the core, this idea that can one person change the world?
Yeah, I mean, and so that's the thing that we explore. It's also, you know, I think in the movie he's having, and we say this at the beginning, he says this, that he's having kind of an existential crisis of, you know, trying to make his life mean something and wondering if he's been wasting, you know, his time. And I think a lot of us have that thought of ourselves in the context of time and space. And this character does. And when we're talking about this, all these philosophical ideas in there, but I think the main, you know, it's a fun movie.
It's a comedy. It's very funny.
Yeah. And you know, and it's something I tried to have that would try to be unpredictable in it, because I hate those movies where you're like, oh, this is the heist movie, and this is they just built the team, and now I can go to the bathroom and get back before that problem happens that's going to happen.
As a screenwriter, do you think about that? Because there's formulas so much in movies, and they teach it this way. They teach at page 30 you do this, page 60 you do this. Yeah. I mean, as a screenwriter, are you pushing back against the idea of a formula?
Definitely, because as a screen watcher, I also don't want that formula, you know. Sometimes it's cool, like, you know, to kind of feel like you know what's going to happen a little bit, and you see what that director, what the beats that director is dancing in. But, you know, it's not really that satisfying to be able to be like, I told you that was going to happen. You know, I hate being able to do that, and I love feeling like the movie is alive and feeling like it's a great story and I don't know what's going to happen, because then I feel in it, you know.
In the movie, as you talked about, you know, whether or not you can change the world and the system that we live in, again, the trailer makes it feel like it's going to be a story about race and race only. This idea that he adopts this overdubbed white voice and therefore he gets ahead as a black man. But that's far from the center of this film.
All of those things are in the movie. That's definitely in the movie. But it comes from a... There's a class analysis that happens in the movie, and definitely my idea is that race and class are intertwined. That that there's a reason for racist ideas, and that is so that the ruling class can keep the working class down, you know.
And that's the big theme in the film Sorry to Bother You, which is in select theaters right now here in the city of Chicago area. Boots Riley is the filmmaker. He is in studio with us right now on the Cochrane Show. We'll take a quick break, come back, continue the conversation. Steve Cochrane Show, 720 WGN. Justin Ind, Dave Ennett as well, Mary Vandevelde, Steve Grzanich. All right. Boots Riley is here, the filmmaker of Sorry to Bother You, which is in theaters now, getting rave reviews. You know, I just texted in saying, oh, it sounds very anti-Trump, right? And I thought about this, too, because there's a lot in the film that may be more about the corporate world that we live in now.
Yeah, it's anti-all of it.
Because this was actually written at the end of Obama's term, the first term,
in the middle
2012.
Of it. I finished writing it in 2012, and we published it as its own paperback book on McSweeney's in 2014. And so what it's critiquing is the economic system that we live in. And you know, like, I really feel like we need to talk about the things that make the politicians make the decisions that they're making. Because Trump, Obama, Democrats, Republicans, they're all taking money, you know, like, they're all like, they're not making decisions because of what they think is right. They're making decisions based on who's paying them. And even for somebody that's rich and elected, there's people that have more money and more power collectively. And this film is talking about our economic system and how that changes our lives.
The course of making this film is so interesting. I don't know if we'll have enough time to get into how you got this film made, but it is Are you surprised at the response? I mean, everyone is enjoying it. The rave reviews for this thing. Are you for your first film to come out for this to not only, and I'm not just talking about good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes or the New York Times, but just the way that there is anticipation for this film. The lines around the corner at the screening that I saw. Are you surprised as a filmmaker for the appetite for this kind of film?
I mean, you know, it's something that you could only hope for it to actually happen. Is crazy, you know. I don't know how to process it yet, you know. People are really responding to it, and it has to do with it being a different kind of film. And so it's great. But I again, like, I'm at a loss for words because there are people all over the country being like, oh, we're trying to buy tickets and it's sold out.
The way that this film came about, and you mentioned McSweeney's, it was the screenplay was in a book in 2014. Dave Eggers championed it. It became, I think he said, the most talked about unproduced screenplay in Hollywood. Everyone knew about it, and a lot of that had to do with the way that you approached it, the sort of hustle that goes into trying to get a film made. Once your script was produced, talk about how you went about making this film.
Yeah, well, you know, taking cue from my own experiences promoting hip hop and doing that independently. I took a lot of that same thing, and there was kind of a stone soup thing, getting different people on. So David Cross and Patton Oswalt, who play the white voices, they were the first people to sign on. They were like, before I had producers or investors, they were like, this is hilarious. We need to be part of this. And then Dave Eggers, McSweeney's, and then SF Film as a filmmaker in residence. I joined that, and that gave it a little bit more clout. Then I became part of Sundance in the Sundance Labs, the writers and directors labs, and that gave it clout. Then, you know, at that point, then certain producers that came on board were circling it, like Nina Yang Bon Jovi. Yeah, she's part of that Bon Jovi family, and Forrest Whitaker, they circled it and were and attracted other people, Macro, who've done a lot of stuff. So all those producers getting around and this buzz about the script and Sundance being behind it made it be that actors were interested in seeing what it was about.
And there were big time actors that wanted the role. Donald Glover comes there are other actors that wanted to be attached or couldn't be attached because of their schedule. But Lakeith Stanfield, who is also a star of the show Atlanta, and he was in the film Get Out.
Mm-hmm.
He is so good in your film because he plays that role so well of not being attached to the corporate side or to the worker side and just sort of being.
Yeah. He's a different kind of actor. It's a rare actor that you only get, you know, you get very few of. And he is not like one of those kind of corny, like soap opera type actors where, like, now here's my confused face. Look at my eyebrows. You know, he's feeling that feeling, and he's not doing it from the outside in. He's feeling it, and he's not worried about what he looks like. And so what ends up happening is that you get a more natural way of being that feels real. And so even though this film has a lot of fantastical things happening, not just the white voice, but we're not spoiling it, but there's a lot of fantastical things happening, and we only are able to really believe it because the acting feels real. It feels you feel like real people are going through these things.
So, final question, just what do you want people to walk out of the theater with? What is the final message of Sorry to Bother You?
Well, there's a lot of messages. I approach this like a novel where there are a lot of, not necessarily messages, but just things, you know? But one thing is optimism. There's optimism, I think, and joy in this movie. And there's an optimism that people can change the way things are, and that doesn't mean that everything will ever be all the way all right, but that there's joy and optimism that comes from the fight.
Boots Riley, the filmmaker, his film Sorry to Bother You, his debut, getting rave reviews in select theaters right now in Chicago.
Thanks. And it's in every, it'll be everywhere starting next week.
There you
well,
go.
But we come out this week because, you know, you want to say that you were first.
That's right. Somebody's got to take on Jurassic World. Or, in that form. Boots Riley, a pleasure to meet you, and congrats on the great film.
All right. Thank you.